Yes, and here at Double Cross Radio, we do not submit. Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another live edition of Double Cross Radio, coming to you from the Republic of Jefferson, and that's Northern California and Southern Oregon counties along the border between California and Oregon. And tonight we have an awesome show all about Bitcoin. I'm going to introduce my special guests in just a moment, but first should I say hi to my co-hosts, Colby and Drew. Hi, guys.
Hey, Chuck.
How's it going, everyone?
Hey, that's Justin, not Colby. Well, Colby, are you there?
I'm right here. I'm still having some connection issues for some reason.
Okay, no problem. Okay, so tonight we're happy to feature two special guests. First, Justin O'Connell. He is the CEO of Gold Silver Bitcoin. That's a site where you can buy gold and silver with bitcoins. And he's co-host of our very own special show. It's a podcast, and he has a lot of interesting shows on there. I like the one about Tony Gwynn, because we're kind of baseball guys, he and I. He's also the author of a first full-length Bitcoin book. It's called Bitcoinomics, and administrator of the Bitcoinomics website. And he lives in San Diego, and he's also he's a head researcher at the Dollar Vigilante for the all things Bitcoin and probably gold and silver, too. So welcome, Justin.
Yeah, thank you for the introduction, guys.
You're welcome. And then we also are going to have Elaine Diane Taylor, and we're just going to call her Elaine. And she's a singer-songwriter from Vancouver, Canada, and she is trained with Canadian jazz vocalist Kate Hammett Vaughn. And I was going to pretend like I knew who Kate Hammett Vaughn was. I don't know Canadian music very well. Kate Hammett Vaughn, I guess, is a really kind of something special. She's a big deal in Canada, so that's really something. And she's is trained at the music school at VCC and communication school at Simon Fraser University. That's in Vancouver. And Elaine writes songs on topics that are kind of outside the normal realm of popular music. And they talk about she has songs that talk about naked short selling and bitcoins and Fukushima disaster and fiat currency and the Federal Reserve. That's one of my favorites, Helicopter Ben. That's actually quite a funny song. Anyway, she's our other guest. And Elaine, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much. Nice to be here.
Yes. Doing the little previews for the show today to try and get a larger audience, we posted several of Elaine's songs and the lyrics, and as I went through and I reread some of those lyrics, I hadn't read them for a while. I'm just always amazed at how diverse and someone in the arts who is studying music and is involved in all these areas of, I would say, just performing arts would have time to have so much insight into economics and finance and all these other issues. And it's really you found a niche. There isn't anybody else doing this.
Thank you. That makes me a little bit different, I know, but I kind of come at Bitcoin from the angle of communications theory, which I study, and art. So I'm looking at it from a different way than the economists. And I love reading their things, and I love listening to their interviews. And they're looking at this from numbers and graphs. And I'm looking at it more from pattern recognition, from the way an artist looks at it. And I think that's just a little bit different.
Yeah, it is. And Justin, he does most of the Bitcoin information that comes on the Dollar Vigilante. And Jeff Berwick's been a guest on our show a couple times, and we really look up to him. He's really an amazing guy. And Justin works for him and his organization. And one of his, before I ever met him, I got to meet him at Freedom Fest. Before I met him, I had read this piece that he wrote, and it's the part of it that he wrote for it was at the beginning. That was really, really awesome. And then he listed all these outlined things that are probably contained in his book. And he's talking about all the different things about Bitcoin that are, they're not about buying and selling. They're about the way Bitcoin changes how you interact with the rest of the world. And I thought it was really, really amazing perspective. Also, it was completely different from what most people were saying.
So nice.
Justin, if you could elaborate on that a little bit more.
Yeah, of course. Well, I really appreciate the kind words, Chuck. And I think that Bitcoin became interesting to me after having studied history in college. I spent 4 years at Linfield College in McMinnville, Oregon, studying history. And my two focuses there, because they were the focuses of my advisor, was Nazi Germany and the Soviet Union. And so I studied these totalitarian societies for quite a while, and something that I drew many parallels with my own life on the West Coast in the United States and in the United States generally. And ultimately, I came to the conclusion that the sort of system under which we live today is in many ways the same system as had been set up in Nazi Germany, that was set up in the Soviet Union, and has really been set up over the 20th century in geographical regions across the planet. And I see Bitcoin as, and decentralized technologies generally, and distributed networks as really the first way in which an alternative life could be forged on the planet. And I think it is a step away from the hierarchy with which mankind's been so familiar with. And so those are the sort of the things that I outlined in the Why I'm a Bitcoiner piece. Sometimes I try to keep this stuff out of my writing and kind of look towards a future or a possible future and not towards the past. But I kind of was inspired at that moment to kind of take a look at why Bitcoin was so intriguing to me in the first place. And as Trace Mayer, who's the individual that introduced me to Bitcoin, has said, is that he's getting a little bit less patient with people who are unwilling to update their banking practices. And sometimes I find myself in the same boat.
Yeah, well, a quote from the first part of that, you said, "I'm not selling Bitcoin. I'm promoting an alternative way of living, doing business." And that's how it is. It changes the way you approach stuff. It takes power away from the banks and gives it to the people. It's decentralized. No one can control you and charge you excessive fees. If they do, you just go to another place, and it's not like all the banks can get together and collude like they do now. It's bringing power to the people. Now, Elaine, one of the things that you talked about in doing this, and you're kind of comparing this to electricity, how that decentralized power in the same way that we're saying that Bitcoin is decentralizing power, because it brought energy to the people at a reasonable cost, and they could use it also.
Well, money is a form of media. It's a medium, which means you have an idea or something of value. It goes through, it's encoded, it's put in through a medium, and then it's decoded on the other side. That's the basics of communication. And it's the same with electricity. It's the same with books. And when we moved from the mechanical age and we moved into the electric age, everything moved from being in a line, a sequence, like a production line, and it moved into a field where it was everything all at once. And that happened in the arts. Say, Picasso, who was painting and looking at everything from every angle at the same time. And Gertrude Stein, who did the same thing with poetry, looking at an item every angle at the same time. And that's the same as every form of media. Television did the same thing, and now the internet, and now it makes sense that money would do exactly the same thing. It's going from being centralized and controlled by a government, it's going to be to being decentralized, and that's a natural progression. That's where it would go. So people who think that it's like a fad or it's going to drop off, I don't think it's going to. And looking at Bitcoin specifically, as opposed to like the other cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin specifically, it has a good number of people, the early adopters and the entrepreneurs, who have got in early enough because of this ideology that that Justin's talking about, this desire to have a new and honest money. And they've gotten in and they're building the infrastructure, and so that will be available to the masses, to everyone, so it makes everyone's lifestyle easier that way and decentralized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree 100% with both of you. This is just amazing how you're both coming to the same points from completely different points of view, and you know, we're seeing the same thing. It's spreading freedom because it's removing power from the centers of power, and it's doing it across the board. It's not just in banking. It's doing it like Lane, like you're saying. It's in the arts. It's going to do it in every way possible because it's that's what money is. Money is communication. Money is what makes markets work. Because it's transmitting the information about the product to the consumer and the producer, and they're able to make their judgments and their information off of that that money information. And when you distort the value of the money, when you debase it, then that information becomes distorted also, and then people make bad decisions, and we start to value things differently. Let's find out. You know, it's a really fascinating concept.
I like what you were saying, Justin, about Bitcoin will be, it'll change the way we think about money, in that the medium itself changes the way we look at money, not just the value of it, as opposed to how much a U.S. dollar is and whether that's the reserve currency or not of the day. It's a bigger issue. It's an issue of being decentralized. It's an issue of being able to transfer money without the fees, without the control there.
Mm-hmm. And I agree with both of you, especially that everything is going to be decentralized, and we've seen it from the cab industry to the money industry. Money's got a pretty bad rap. People don't really like money, but I think that that's really a product of the way in which money is managed in our society and what the money is, not that money is innately evil.
Oh, gosh.
And I think, Elaine, you're in an industry that was really shaken by decentralizing technologies first, which is the music industry. And I think that really Napster and BitTorrent in particular sort of put these distributed networks into the global mind, perhaps then making something like Bitcoin possible or easily graspable by most people.
I think so. And it moved through. I was in the publishing field for quite a while. Doing books and games and that kind of thing. So I was in that during the mechanical kind of age of it, where things where you needed people who were specialized to do it. And now that's moved into e-books, and it's decentralized as well. And I think that's what happened with music. And it's thrown the power balance up, because the power players who were making the money in it, that's all changed. So it's like a new group of people, or there's a new way of doing something, and the way that people make money at it, make a living at it or a profit at it, that'll change. That has to be worked out. That's all part of changing a regime. That's all part of the new thing.
Yeah, that one of the things that I got to do at Freedom Fest was attended all the But I tell you, that's for all you that are listening out there. If you get a chance to go to this event, you should go. And some of the people that go every year said this year wasn't quite as good as previous years. So now I'm just kicking myself for not going to previous years. But I thought it was awesome. This guy named Robert Anthony Peters, and I don't think he's necessarily an economist or he was just there with a friend of his who's has a gold business, and he was talking about how debasement of money leads to deterioration of moral values as well as monetary values. The money seems to be something, or the whatever is our medium of exchange, seems to be a way that we use as a basis to judge everything. It goes beyond just the products we're buying and selling. It goes into moral issues, and we see a deterioration of our culture because our money isn't worth things, and that's historically that's happened in every civilization that's debased their money. I'd like to hear what you guys have to say about that.
It has to do with a valuing of people and a transparency of the money. And when it became fiat and there wasn't a transparent transfer of this value for that value, that also went into other parts of our society as well, where one gains at another's expense. It's not a matter of sharing resources or an open transparent interaction. One gains and one loses, and so the one who has more then gains more by manipulating the situation to have everyone, say, sacrifice for the greater good, while that person is personally profiting without anyone knowing. And that's when a system falls apart. That's what's going on right now.
There's been a lot of writings lately on the concept of anti-fragility, and I think a lot of the studies into this concept has posited that centralized systems generally do not respond to their circumstances as quickly as a decentralized system does. And I think that the deterioration of money really starts with the centralization of it, and really anything for that matter. I think that that's really where the death of transparency starts, and things like Bitcoin make it to where it's the exact opposite. It's completely transparent, and for all intents and purposes, it's decentralized. Although the first miners very well might one day be the new elite on the planet, that's not going to necessarily mean that they have any control over any other individuals. That control starts and begins with the monopoly of force, which, of course, as Weber wrote, is what the state is, a monopoly on force, and whether or not that's a virtue is debatable.
Well, all systems, like all empires, they rise and fall. They go through a series of events, rising and falling. And when they get to the top, the peak, and everyone at the beginning was sacrificing for the good of the greater good, that's the point where someone who has power starts to loot. And they realize that they can personally profit at no one will notice. And that's the turning point, and that's what happens with every empire. That's what happens with every closed system that isn't self-sustaining, that doesn't go on forever. And then what they do is they use whatever form of media there is to ensure that the average person who's giving into that system believes that everything's fine. and then it falls apart. And it's, I don't know, that's what I see where Bitcoin is coming in now, is letting people know, oh, okay, maybe everything isn't okay. Maybe it's time to take a look at looking after your own resources. And that's why I think that's where we are. That's part of the things that I write about, is that very thing, letting people know gently that all may not be the way that you're being told by whomever is in power over you.
Yeah, that's really important to tell them gently, because there's I call it normalcy bias. Drew says that, I think I'm stretching the definition, that term, a little bit, and he might be right, but they don't realize how much trouble they're in. And when you start to bring it to them, they start to take it out on the messenger. So you have to keep them calm while you're telling them this stuff, because when they first start to realize this, it just like get this pit in your stomach, like I can't breathe, what's going on, and it's pretty scary actually when they start to realize that their money is worthless. And
well, that's where the black swan events come in, where you don't see something because of your normalcy bias. You don't see something as a possible outcome. And I think if we tell them, like, I don't know what other people's, I don't know what Justin's role in it is. Maybe his is to be more forceful in it. Mine personally isn't. because I think if people know gently a few times, then they'll hear it. And then when they hear something that's more specific, that has specific data, then it's easier for them to see, oh, this is a possibility. Let's take a look at this information, as opposed to just thinking, it couldn't ever happen here. It'll never happen again. I know it happened in the past, but no, it won't happen now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that is definitely one of the main things about the modern American consciousness, is that notion that we're different, that the events of history could not happen here. When really, I mean, if you really connect yourself to the world out there, which few Americans do, in particular because of their lack of travel, they'd see that their participation in the system here at home has really there's blood on all of our hands, and I think a real manner. And I'm not too forceful, Elaine. I usually don't bring this stuff up in conversation. I try to keep things light and talk about things like baseball or what have you. But among my friends, close friends, a lot of whom live in other parts of the world, I think that there's just this unspoken understanding that what we're working for is a better world, a decentralized world, a more fruitful world, a world in which presidents and prime ministers are sort of a thing of a past, like a king god.
I'm gonna plug Bitcoin Barbarians again. This is a unique song, and it's available to anybody who wants it for a donation of Bitcoin to Elaine's Bitcoin wallet, which I think is a unique marketing thing. I don't know how it's going, but I was just taken by it. It actually was the thing that spurred me to open up my Bitcoin wallet so I could get this song. So I wanted to thank you for that. Elaine.
Very nice. Thanks. No, people are really generous. They really are behind it. I had someone email me once and say, I would like a copy of everything you've released and name your price. And I said, okay. So I listed the things that I've recorded, two albums and a number of singles. And I said, and I have my eye on this little villa in Italy. And that's kind of, you know, so I gave him the price. Anyways, he sent me back, he bought them, and that was wonderful. But he sent me back this link to this villa in Italy, and he says, oh, it'll just have to wait. That villa will have to wait. But it was very cute.
Yeah, so I want to read some of these lyrics, because they're just, you're a very good poet as well as a singer and a composer. Bitcoin Barbarians at the gate, open wide. Peasants can't wait, for they robbed while the bankers played, so the penny's going to drop in this coin race. It sounds better when she sings it than when I talk it, but this is history. Justin, you recognize the analogy, I'm sure, the barbarians at the gate, the Roman Empire. This is history repeating itself. This is a chance for, I'll let Diane, or Elaine, excuse me, Elaine, Diane Taylor, I'll let Elaine tell the story because it's her song.
But can I give a few words ahead of time on the lyrics there?
Sure.
Is that all right? In writing this, when I write, I like to work symbolically, meaning that looking at something from all angles at one time, so things like the penny's going to drop in this coin race. Penny's going to drop is also when something that's evident becomes self-evident to you, and you can make a choice, an informed choice about it. And that's what this is about. This is about, like Rome, when the barbarians were at the gate, the peasants actually opened the gate to let them in. They wanted this because they saw that the government of the day was looting them. And so they didn't know what was coming in, but it's got to be better than that. So they were actually let in. And that's what this is. This is, we want a change. We want something different. And that's what this is about. It's got the bread and circus in it. And it's got the government who's trying to tell the people that everything is fine. Here's, have some free bread, have some free entertainment to keep them down, while the government was looting them. And that's what that's about.
Yeah, and it's just, you really spun the words so eloquently. Ruled and run by a dollar and a gun. The world is spun by some media fun, and a Ponzi game in Caesar's name is virtually done. There's a new race. It's I just think this is genius. I really do. That's what just made me go and open a Bitcoin wallet so I could have this to play whenever I needed to hear it. So it's, I hope all of you out there listening, and some of you I know are not.
Hey, Chuck, hold on. We're getting reports we lost audio. Just a second here.
Uh-oh.
Okay, just a minute. Let's play the player.
The world is spun by some media fun and a Ponzi game.
Okay, I'm hearing audio. Let's check with the folks in chat. Hey, chat, you guys respond if you could hear us.
Yes.
Yeah, I can hear you just fine.
Okay, I'm talking to our listeners in chat right now. Can you guys hear us? Respond in the chat console and let us know if you could hear us. Our producer, Jewel, says that we are broadcasting. So I don't know when we started broadcasting.
Someone else,
I think it was
about someone else might have a problem with their computer.
No, Jewel said that she lost audio, and Vince said that he lost audio. So I think we lost maybe 30 seconds or so of audio.
Okay. Well, we're back on. And I really respect anybody that can write music like this and just tell a story with just, you know, a few words in a like a small poem, and that it really tells a whole story while you're reading it, and that's what music and poetry is supposed to be about, I guess. You certainly did a great job on this, and I would just tell anybody that's out there that if you wanted to see how Bitcoin works and you like this song, you can go to YouTube and you can listen to it, see if you like it. But this is a good excuse for you to open a Bitcoin wallet and make a purchase and see how easy it is. It is really easy. It just click and it's done. And it doesn't, there's no cost for transferring the Bitcoins from one wallet to another. And it's just amazing. And I think a lot of people are dragging their feet, and they're being drugged to this new thing, kicking and screaming because they've never tried it. And you got to try it before you get too critical. You got to see that, because part of what I believe, this is something I heard from Jeffrey Tucker, is that the thing that gives Bitcoin its value is its utility. It's very useful, and it saves a lot of money when you're transferring money from one place to another. It doesn't necessarily have to be from my wallet to Elaine's wallet. It can be from my wallet to make my house payment if my bank ever, you know, gets off the dime and gets going on this. Or it could be from, if I'm traveling, I don't have to take a lot of money with me. I can just plop down wherever I am and transfer some money into something there, or use a Bitcoin ATM machine and get some local cash. It really has a lot of uses, and it's less expensive than the current things, which we have to kind of manipulate, and they're kind of cumbersome to get them to work right. I mean, my bank always closes down my bank card unless I tell them I'm going on a trip. So it's you don't have to do that with Bitcoin. It's easy.
Yes, so, it's also very secure, because if you're going to buy something on the internet without Bitcoin, you usually got to use a debit card, and that's going to contain a lot of your information on it. Best you use a credit card, which still has a lot of your information on it. Bitcoin doesn't really have that problem. I also want to say, along with its usefulness, as Jeffrey Tucker, who's a very smart man, posited, it's also rare, and there's only 13 million of them, so not even every individual in Southern California, where I am right now, could get a Bitcoin. And that's in existence right now. There's only 13 million.
Yeah, and there will only be, it's 21 million total?
21 million total. So I'm sure that in 100 years, when there's 21 million Bitcoins, there will be 21 million Southern Californians too. So the same concept will stand. Unless the worst we can think of happens to SoCal.
Well, Justin, you also had another call that I really appreciate a lot. That was... it was in June 27th, you were writing about the if 10% of humanity turned to Bitcoiners, then it would suddenly start this unstoppable rise of awareness for everybody else, and it'd be a short period of time thereafter it would be kind of universally accepted. I think that universally accepted was meaning worldwide, but it could even happen within a country too.
Yeah, I think it can. With the internet, it'll be global if it catches on somewhere. I think we're already seeing it catch on very quickly, and I'm not sure if we're at that 10% number quite yet. I'm not sure if that 10%.
I think we're quite a ways from it. There's a lot of people I talked to have never even heard of it yet, so we've got a ways to go. But it's growing. That's the important thing. More and more businesses are accepting it every day.
I think the infrastructure is being set up well, and I think also the fact that it's been a stable price for the last little while helps. So there's less people who are just speculating in it, and there's more people who are actually using it for transactions, which is what you want in a currency.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, some of the early people that were just, you know, holding them were probably holding them because there wasn't a lot of places to spend them. But as the value started to go up, and I think was it Overstock.com was the first one, a big place to do it. Now there's about a dozen places out there that are much bigger than Overstock.com that are accepting Bitcoin. It's a kind of a big deal now.
And there's more ATMs going on as well. Mm-hmm. I went to the first ATM in Vancouver, Canada, and it was pretty cute going in the first time, and there was hardly anyone around. It was in a coffee shop, and now it was just on Twitter yesterday that there are 8 going in Toronto, and they had a picture of it there. It's like, yep, here we are. More and more.
Yeah, and it's, to me, they don't see there's any signs of this thing going away. I know there's some critics out there that say that it still is not anything intrinsic, and it really is. They don't see it in quite the right way. I'm referring to Peter Schiff. He's pretty negative on it, and I usually agree with him all the time, but I don't on this. And we talked a little bit about it at Freedom Fest, but he kind of is pretty set in his ways, I think.
Yeah, well, it's funny because I've spoken with Peter Schiff a couple times on this topic, and this most recent time we were kind of having a little back and forth, and I respect his opinion of it. And he did mention, though, that of the methods of payment his company accepts, Bitcoin is the fastest and securest. And I didn't say anything at the time, but I thought to myself that was a pretty good argument for Bitcoin.
That's a really good argument, yeah, for the currency of it. I know he feels that for wealth preservation, he's big into gold and silver, as Jim Rickards is as well. It's gold and silver, but for transactions, for currency, Bitcoin is great for that. I know that I've transferred money into the States and doing it through the banks. There's fees and it's held up, but just doing it through Bitcoin, it's just like that, no fee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's a couple different futures we could see. Cryptocurrency definitely makes that so easy, and anybody who's ever tried to send even a domestic wire transfer knows that it's a pain and that checks are slow. And there is a possibility, though, with that people say with whom I've spoken, that there's a chance that an altcoin will actually be in the future kind of the transactional currency, and that Bitcoin will sort of be the gold standard, a wealth preservation vehicle. And it'll be interesting to see how that plays out, and if Peter Schiff ultimately is right on that topic. But absolutely, the cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin, when you're transferring it, it's a breeze compared to all of the other methods.
That is the absolute truth. My wife is from Poland. She still has a lot of family there, and we send money over there every once in a while. And it's, you know, we got to get in our car, drive down to Walmart, buy a MoneyGram thing. And if you go over so much, then the fees go up. So we try and do it as right up to the limit of what we can send per that amount of fee, unless we're going to go up to the next limit. And then we can send it, and then they have to go to a bank to retrieve it. When we send it to them in Bitcoin, it just get on the computer, and it's done in like less than a minute.
Yeah,
so and it doesn't cost anything.
No, so easy.
Yeah, so that's just one thing. I don't want you guys to think that if you have to have a relative in a foreign country to make this worthwhile. Have you ever tried to go to your bank on Saturday or Sunday and get some money? I mean, you can do it through an ATM. They limit you how much you can take at a time. Bitcoin, you don't have all these restrictions. It's your money. It's there. You can use it however you want. And banks are there. They don't want to lose all their currency over the weekend. People out there going through their stuff on ATM. So they limit how much you can take out. They have to keep their fractional reserve system going by having at least 10% on deposit for everybody that's put money in the bank. And it's kind of a Ponzi scheme to me, but. Bitcoin isn't.
You're right.
Bitcoin is not.
A lot of people contend that it is. a lot of people contend that it is a Ponzi scheme, and usually once they try to start making their argument, it's clear that they are not sure the proper parameters of a Ponzi scheme.
I definitely don't believe in fractional reserve banking. Another song that Elaine has is Coins and Crowns, and one of the stanzas in there was really amazing to me. It's gold and silver from the ground, 5,000 years money found. Mine it up and melt it down. Fair exchange will keep us sound. Print it up and all goes down. And of course, again, it's much more beautiful when she's singing those words than when I'm just reading them. Those.
Thank you.
But that's another amazing song. And this song actually that you wrote was featured in a documentary, I think. That's correct?
Right. Mike Maloney's documentary, The Hidden Secrets of Money, and it was featured in episode one. And Helicopter Ben that you were talking about, which is about fiat currency, that's a music video that was put together by Mike Maloney and Dan Rubuck, who works with Mike Maloney, and that's on YouTube through their on their channel. And I love what they did with it. It was very nice of them.
Yeah, so, Elaine, I can't help but think, I play music as well, and I listen to radio every single day just to kind of see what is popular or what's being pushed, I'd call it. And I can't help but think, you know what, something tells me that there is a little bit of payola going on, because I can't tell you how many times I've heard the same five songs in the last 6 months. It must be pushing 50 to 100 times. What are your thoughts on that, if you believe that is something that the music industry still runs on, and what Bitcoin can do about it?
You know, I'm really not sure. I haven't gone that route yet, and I think that the things that I write might be interesting to programs like CBC. They might be, but I'm not sure if it is with popular music, because the things that I'm talking about are sort of ahead of the curve that way, so I haven't even tried that. It might come about that way, and that would be great. I don't know about the payola. I'm sure it happens. I'm really not sure.
I'm definitely sure it's happened. And we've had Jordan Page on the show, and we've had Tatiana Moroz on the show, and I asked them the same question a little more point blank, and they didn't want to go there. I think that they're happy with their little niche they have, and they didn't want to be completely blackballed from the music industry.
I think that's pretty wise. Sure.
So they just kind of dodged the question. I hear a lot of the stuff that Jordan does seems pretty mainstream to me. It reminds me a lot of stuff I listened to when I was in college. It was that people still say, "Oh, classic rock, love it." And that's Jordan Page. But you know, he doesn't get much airtime, if any. And there's been people that were going to play his stuff, and they found out that he was a supporter of Ron Paul's, and they said, "Oh, I can't play that." And so. No, it's going on out there somewhat. It may not just be payola. It may just be, we only want content that has a certain message in it.
You know,
well, the FCC
I'm
is
not
a lot.
Really, I'm not really too worried about that from my point of view. I'm looking at this as art and not commerce. So I'm not trying to write or create something that I think will sell well. I'm looking at it as art. Actually, so if it becomes something that sells well, fantastic. If people like it, that's fantastic. But I'm aware of the rocky marriage between art and business, and that if you pull away from something you really believe strongly in artistically and go for something that you feel will be commercial, you've sort of lost something. It becomes a different entity, and that's just not where I want to go with what I make.
I think luckily, especially since BitTorrent came out, while the artists have only become more common, more people are recording music than ever before. To record music has become cheaper. And I think that there's sort of an issue right now with raising the funds for the artists to sort of live off of in a lot of cases and do what they love. I think as though, the same as we're seeing with banking, as decentralized distribution mediums entrench themselves further, we'll see the sort of mainstream labels and studios fall by the wayside, play less of a large role, and musicians will be able to connect directly with their listeners.
That's a really good way of putting that. Exactly. And they'll have a niche market that they can reach immediately and talk to and communicate with immediately. I think that's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. I know that retail stores, or rather clothing brands, used to, their main goal was always to get into a Macy's or a JCPenney, but with the internet age and how much more profitable it is for them just to sell direct to their audience or to their customer via internet websites, it's really less of a business model to get into a Macy's or a JCPenney. So in a way, I guess the Macy's and JCPenney's, they're kind of the banks of the clothing industry at this point.
Like the mainstream media of the
exactly. Yep.
Kind of dinosaurs.
You guys are bringing up some really good points that I'd like. Just like the clothing industry, you can't really do anything now. I mean, we've got Sears, we've got mainstream stores closing down. I mean, in a sense, because of the digital era, everything's collapsing, and eventually, it's just going to continue.
Well, it's not collapsing so much as it's being replaced.
And right.
So it's the dinosaur doesn't have anything to eat anymore, so he's gonna die. And the new thing that is taken over is gonna thrive. And you know, we don't want to support the old thing that is taking our resources from the things we want to do that are new. So that we just have to let it go.
There's a lot of smaller artists who are creating products, like through Etsy they sell it. And they support themselves that way. They don't have to do the larger contracts to a clothing company or a large store anymore. It's decentralized, just like the Bitcoin.
We started talking about music, and I always like to bring up the story of the I think Douglas French wrote this. It was about the most successful touring band of all time, the Grateful Dead, and how they marketed themselves, and they could care less if they got their songs played on there. They had, anytime they have a concert, they'd have a group of people show up that were pretty devoted fans, and they would let them go on there and make bootleg recordings. Well, actually, they would provide them with a recording of the concert, and they'd let them film the concerts and make their own little bootleg things that went out there, and it promoted the band, and it raised the interest in the band, and they were able to get premium tickets for their performances and sold out shows. And they just abandoned the conventional model that was there and said, well, let's do what the audience wants for a change. And all of a sudden they were just extremely successful. And they were the most successful touring performing band of all time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I haven't seen it yet, but Zach Braff, who's an actor and I believe a writer and perhaps producer as well, his new movie just came out. And it was funded 100% from Kickstarter, and it's in theaters now. So his fans funded it directly, and he raised $3 million in like 24 hours for this film, this mainstream film that's now in theaters. And I imagine that's the first time anything like that has ever happened, which, of course, just totally deceits and undermines the Hollywood way of doing things.
Yep. And think of this, how much easier it's going to be able to do this with bitcoins. You just transfer from one wallet to another, and it's, mm-hmm. it becomes simpler and simpler, and no one even knows that you've done it. It's a secret transaction, so that they can't say, "Oh, we want to keep an eye on him. He funded this artist over here who has some kind of questionable content on their material, so we want to put them on a list." And that's not going to be possible. The centralized state is going to deteriorate. Also, it's going to go the way of the dinosaurs as well.
Yeah, I think that's the trend we're seeing. We're seeing decentralization happen, and I think that there's two roads we can go down at this. Well, there's many roads, but decentralization and centralization are two major themes for human organization. And right now, we're at probably one of the biggest crossroads in our history because of the tech. As Jeffrey Tucker said, and I really like the way you put this. As a student of history, is that there was the Dark Ages, and now post internet, there's the Light Ages, and I think that's a nice summation of history.
I do too. Jeffrey Tucker has a he's a Renaissance man. he knows a lot about a lot of things, which is rare in society today. Most people are specialized and they're focused on just one or two things. He has a knowledge of a lot of different things. And it's incredible, actually, what he can speak to.
I found that to be a very insightful quote, and it makes a lot of sense, right? Logically, if you think about it. I mean, there's a lot of issues with the internet. There's a lot of things that you can't. I don't believe anything I read on the internet for the most part. I'm sort of old-fashioned in that I think there needs to be some sort of. I think that that individuals will want there to be some way to kind of move beyond the blogs, move up beyond the news sources, and find kind of a decentralized internet-based academia-type organization. And we're not there yet with the internet, but I think that the internet has made humans much more in touch with the nature and reality than they ever were before, except maybe the Paleolithic. You know, the last time you could say that there was a free market.
Yeah, but the free market gets blamed for everything that happens, even though that's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but what's coming down the future for you two? Justin, you can go ahead and go first. What new projects are you working on? A reminder, if you want to know more about Bitcoin, you should consider purchasing his book. But what else you got coming down the pike?
Well, Jeff and I have been working on a Bitcoin book for a little bit, so that's going to come out. I've also started, which is really going to be a lot of what Bitcoinomics covered, but just expanded. And you can find Bitcoinomics for free. It's actually you can find the free version at goldsilverbitcoin.com, or if you just type in Bitcoinomics, it'll probably pop up as well on Google. And so Jeff and I are putting together a work, and then I'm working on a something else just to kind of go over these distributed systems, not in a technical way, but just to kind of run over what the Ubers of the world, what the Lyfts of the world, what the Bitcoins of the world, what all these technologies mean for us on a day-to-day basis. And other than that, Chuck, I'm just kind of trying to enjoy this new way of living for humans, which doesn't involve sitting in a traffic jam each morning and afternoon. Because I've been there and I've done that, and I think it's very stressful and unhealthy.
Okay. Elaine, what's coming up in the future for you?
The next song that I'm working on is on the death of the dollar. So goes away with the death of the dollar. Written musically based on British kind of stanzas, so it kind of speaks to the last empire that fell, and it's talking about the same things that I was talking about earlier, going from line to field, and how we've gone through these systems, and they each die, and that's going to happen again. So goes the way with the death of the dollar. So that'll be recorded. The words are basically done first draft, and that's on my website, which is elainedianetaylor.com, and that's also where you can find Bitcoin Barbarian and a bunch of other things if you're interested. And that's working on that, and then there'll be a full album as well, and moving into ebooks and that kind of thing. That's where I'm going.
Well, that's interesting and actually very exciting. I noticed on the credits for Bitcoin Barbarians that you had, big thanks to Jim Rickards, and Max Kaiser, Stacy Herbert, and Peter Landry. Those are some pretty big names in the financial world. So you were a pretty well-connected person, it seems.
I have been fortunate to meet a few people, and I really appreciate their words to me, Mike Maloney and Jim Rickards. Has been very encouraging, very, very, very so. His book, The Death of Money, which is just out, I highly recommend it. Well informed and kind man.
Yeah, that's on my list to read right now. I read previously a book, is When Money Dies, which was written about the inflation in the late 70s, early 80s, and then he did an update for the quickly put it out. I think his name was Adam Ferguson. He put it out after the banking problem in 2007, 2008, a revised version. But that was very interesting. I think Jim's book is going to be a little more in-depth about things that are more relevant to what we're facing now. This was more talking about Zimbabwe and hyperinflation and the Weimar Republic and stuff.
Well, the infrastructure of the system that we're in right now is already crumbling from the inside. And
oh,
so
yeah.
It's just a matter of what will set it off? What will be the snowflake that makes the avalanche come down? That kind of thing. It's already done.
And to kind of elaborate on that point, Elaine, not to interrupt you, is that you're 100% right, and I'm not sure if it's a matter of an avalanche beginning, but that the avalanche is always, I've heard it put this way, it's always kind of falling, and we're just kind of in the midst of it, and it's actually not that bad for a lot of people, for some people, of course, but I mean, there's a lot of green shoots, if you will.
I think it's important for people to take a look at information from different unrelated sources, and that's sort of what I'm behind, to not just hear something from one source, that there are instances where people who have power will say things, maybe not with a bad intent, but something that will profit them personally, and that it's important for each of us to take a look at information and do your own research and take a look at the issues that are involved in your life. Oh, there's another thing that I'm working on,
that's
too, is the 3-minute gold news that I do, which is taking people who talk about gold, like Jim Rickards, Mike Maloney, Jim Rogers, and learning from them and taking interviews that they do, which sometimes are like an hour long, and condensing them to a 3-minute read. And I do the 3-minute gold news as often so that people can just who aren't economically based can just have a quick read and see what's going on without having graphs and without using economic jargon, because some people don't understand what these words mean. And it's just from the newbie's point of view. Here's some information that you can take and do some research and some decisions for your life.
That's really important. That's how I came to the economic knowledge that I had. I started off with the things I could understand. If I couldn't understand it, I'd just skip it over to the next one. And I slowly started to gain some knowledge of it, but I didn't have anybody out there that was doing summaries for me, breaking it down so it'd be faster process. It took me years to get to where I got. Yes. I kind of understand a little bit what's going on. This is really an amazing resource for people to use. That's on your website.
Well, I have a little bit of background. I mean, I studied economics in university, but I'm not an economics major. So I come from that. Plus, I was a business owner. So I've been there, and I understand some of the things. And I think as an artist, I can kind of translate them and maybe make it, you know, a little easier for someone who's new to this and take a look at it.
As for the avalanche starting, Justin, I'll see what you think of this. There's a lot of things that can happen that people in governments think will have a certain effect, and they never seem to ever take any kind of judgment of what an unintended consequence could be. The present administration put sanctions on Russia for what's ever going on in Ukraine as some kind of response to that, trying to hurt them with sanctions. And what this is doing is hurting the dollar. It's going to hurt Russia too, but it's also hurting the people who trade in the dollar. And it's going to hurt the euro because they're keeping European countries from trading with them also. And it's going to put a lot of pressure on these currencies, which are very fragile right now. I think that could be something that could be the tipping point if this goes much longer. What do you think, Justin?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that really in the last 2 months, especially with the United States kicking up sanctions against Russia, we've really seen a lot of the cards that Russia has had to play and where their allies sit and stand. And while many Americans are at home thinking that Russia has invaded a sovereign country on her border, they're mistaken in that Russia has been worried ever since the fall of the Soviet Union, the fall of the wall, as NATO climbed ever closer to Russia's border. And this has sort of been the seedling of the conflict we're seeing now in the Ukraine. It's yet another sovereign nation that NATO has influenced and is basically lined up all across Russia's border. And in the last 2 months, we've seen a lot of the allies throughout the world of Russia and the United States, like China and India and South Korea and France, and the list is really quite staggering. It's historical proportions of countries that are now making agreements to start de-dollarizing. So whereas this was sort of in the domain of people on the internet talking, now we're seeing nation states kind of put their plans into place or to show that this was something that they foresaw coming, and now the time's coming closer and they need to start kind of rearranging their investments. And it's away from the US dollar and US dollar denominated assets. And you know, it's if you're not positioned correctly and you're not thinking about these things and you're not spiritually sound, first and foremost, it's going to be a very stressful time. And I think we're going to see a lot of people snapping, in uniform or not.
Yeah, and I, as we all kind of acknowledge, the dollar is already toast. We already know that. But just not very many people have realized it yet. But if they, if the Russians also have...
Not very many Americans. I think most of the world seems to know that we're done for.
Yeah, but the Russians hold a lot of our bonds, and they could just destroy the bond market by dumping those on the market. It wouldn't be good for them either, but they could do that as an act of, you know, retaliation. And that would pretty much bring an end to the dollar, probably start a war. And that's the only thing probably keeping them from doing it.
Yeah, I think that the Russia definitely seems to be not a global aggressor at this stage. It seems they've done everything they can to avoid armed conflict with the United States, but they're not obviously...
They have too much to lose. They're still about 10 years away from where they need to be before they can be more aggressive.
Yeah, and it's interesting to see if they even want to be that aggressive. I think that there's a long discussion to be had about sort of the shadow interest behind Western governments, namely. And Russia is really one of the few nation states that doesn't fit neatly into this sort of theory that there's global governance taking place and that nation states in the West sort of work together, including China to a degree. And Russia always has stood out like a sore thumb, as if they kind of were a little bratty, if you will. Towards, I guess, Western bankers, to put it bluntly.
Well, they've acted pretty aggressively against some of the banking interests, central banking interests in Europe, and I think there's an arrest warrant out for a couple of them. I think they can't travel into the Russian territory anymore. But
I think it's good in times like this for people to just look after some things for themselves, have a bit of gold, have some money set aside to for whatever comes. It's just good to be safe that way.
Yes,
absolutely. Gold's insurance.
Mm-hmm. It's a good time also to make stronger bonds with the people you can trust, the people that are around you, that, you know, so you have groups of people that can depend on each other. They'll gain strength from that. It's, you know, helping out your neighbors. Things like that are really important, I think, to getting through all this, because it could be really, really, really bad, or it could just be unpleasant, but it's not going to be as good as it is now. I know that.
Well, it's like when you know winter's coming. You just prepare for it. You get a scarf, and you buy some hot chocolate ahead of time, and you think, what can I do in the winter? Well, you do quieter things, and you light a fire and do something with your family. Wait for winter to pass.
Yeah. So, anyway, this has been a fabulous hour. It went by way too fast for me. You guys are incredible guests.
Thanks, that was really fun.
It's my pleasure.
I enjoyed this a lot. I'm going to have you back next time you get something up you want to promote or whatever. Drop me a line. We'd love to have you on any time. And continue doing what you're doing. It gives me hope in humanity. There's just so many bright, eager young people that are out there doing things that are really productive, and they're really helping to grow the base of knowledge for all of society, and helping to wake people up to, you know, stop watching so much baseball. Even though I love baseball, yet you got to pay attention to the more important stuff first. That's for the recreation time when you have things left over, time left over. So, thank you very much, both of you, for being here. Next week, Colby's got a special show lined up for all of you guys about gun technology, gun laws, gun ammunition, things, how to retrofit your rifles, and it's going to be an awesome show. We've got a couple special guests lined up, so guys that are out there in the audience, make sure that you tune in next week for that, and say goodbye to our...
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you all.